Repeat her name because we were on to black.
Yeah,
tape.
Yeah. In those days, Miss. Miss Enid Russell Smith invited me to lunch at the University Women's Club. She was at that time, I'm not sure, was assistant secretary or one pip up. Anyway, she was in charge of a big a department, I think, in the Ministry of Health, and she invited me to lunch with Geraldine Aves, and there we were, the three of them, in that good old dining room in Audley Square. And she said that they were going to set up this working party on social workers in the local authority, health and welfare services, and what did I think about it. And I said how delighted I was to hear it. And then she told me the terms of reference and so on. And then, to my amazement, about halfway through lunch, she said, "Will you be the chairman of it?" And I said, "Well, I didn't think that was really a very good idea. I didn't think I knew enough about those services, and that I had never actually worked in a local authority." So she said, and I was very much struck by this, it was civil service thoroughness, that they had consulted the local authorities and that they would agree to my being chairman. So then I said, yes, I suppose in those days I said yes to everything. And then we discussed the membership of it. Several people whom I didn't know by name or otherwise, but they sounded very good people.
Suggested the membership.
Yes, they suggested the membership. Excepting, she said, "Who do you think should be vice chairman? You better have a vice chairman." So I said, "Robin Hughes Jones."
Yes.
And he was appointed vice chairman. They also had an interesting device which I'd never come across before or since, which was a steering committee. There was this working party. And then there was a steering committee, which, as far as I remember, doesn't matter, met every 6 months or every 12 months.
Yes.
And advised us as to where we were going, and we told them what we thought we were doing. Our first meeting was in 1955, yes. We were practically parallel with the Ingleby Committee. We used to meet at the Ministry of Health was then in Savile Row, off Oxford Street, and we used to meet there. We evolved a very good working method. We used to go through all the written evidence that came in and decide from whom we wanted to take oral evidence. We'd, of course, divide into those from whom you must take oral evidence and those whose evidence you think is interesting and you'd like to know more about what they've said. And then, of course, there's the rest. But those that we did take oral evidence from, we used to go through it and decide what questions we wanted to ask the witnesses and send these questions to them beforehand, so that they could think about them, which I think was a very good way of doing things. And when we were beginning to get ideas about some major things that we thought we might recommend, then we put these into the questions and discussed them with them. We were quite a small group. Of course, obviously, we had to get to know each other. And one of the very first things they said to me was, "Will you define a social worker?" And I said, "No. If I define a social worker, as time goes on, you'll find all kinds of reasons for thinking you don't like the definition. And anyway, it's just imposing something on you. I suggest that one of you should in time define a social worker." Well, after a time, we decided to send out a questionnaire to every local authority because, as you can very well imagine, one of the big difficulties was to get your own ideas about was a function distinct from other functions, and to find out who in local authorities called by whatever name was performing, meaning either in whole or in part, this function. Was performing either wholly or partially this particular function.
Yes.
So we had to have some kind of definition to put into the questionnaire. So I said to one of our members, Chris Berridge, who was clerk to the Essex County Council, would he do the defining? Mm. And he said he would, and he produced a perfectly excellent definition, which went into the questionnaire. We had two very good secretaries, and I think it was, and we had also someone else for a time working for us. I think it was due to them we got such a high response rate. As far as I remember, it was a 95% response rate from local authorities. Well, this of course was the first picture at all in this absolutely darkest Africa.
Yes.
Of what was happening in those, really nine different services. We did a great deal of travelling and going out visiting, which gave you an idea both of some good work being done, but also on the awful limitations. You know, work with the handicap, for instance, that people thought just in terms of some kind of physical aid, and nothing else.
Yes.
I remember one visit where the local authority had supplied a wheelchair. It was a young woman who was paralyzed, living at home, desperately frustrated, terribly frustrated. Thank goodness for the wheelchair because it got her out. She'd only fairly recently had it. But the visiting officer read her a lecture about how grateful she ought to be to her mother and how awful it was to her mother, poor her mother, having her handicapped there all the time. Well, this ghastly frustration. And there was the kind of thing that was happening. Simply adding to the frustration, adding to the poor mother's feeling of overburdenedness and self-righteousness. Just doing exactly the wrong the wrong thing. Of course, very, very different in country districts from towns. On the whole, yes, I think it would be true to say on the whole, much better in country districts. Than in the big cities. For instance, I remember in Leeds, we did quite a lot of visiting on the outskirts of the city, handicapped and disabled people living in basements and that kind of thing. There were no local offices at all, so anybody who wanted or had to go to the office had to go to the town hall, had to climb all the steps up to the town hall when they got there.
Yes. I remember Joan, when I worked in Nottingham, Joan Aiden telling me that she did the survey for you.
Yeah, well, this was another thing that
they just didn't keep records in the mental health.
Oh, no. I've given an example in that last history of mine. In that last history that I wrote of all the cards. Well, the case papers being on the desk in the reception, with all the names perfectly visible.
Yes.
And, well, that was when there were case papers. But in other places, there might be nothing but a card index.
Yes.
With name and address, and not any details about what was the nature of the need. It might be the section of legislation under which they came. It might be that they were potentially in need of care and attention.
I mean, have you discovered all that? It must have been very difficult not to make some kind of comment or exclaim. But I mean, on the committee, I mean, Tommy Tinto was on the committee.
Tommy Tinto was on.
And I can't remember. But I mean, there were local authority chief officers there who were responsible for that kind of setup.
Oh, yes. Well,
must
yes,
be,
but
must
it's
be quite a lot of diplomacy.
Not a bit, because it's always somebody else who's doing these things, not you.
Oh,
no, I didn't. That wasn't a problem at all. One of the most powerful members of the committee was the then chief MOH for Liverpool, Andrew Semple.
Yes.
But, well, as Geraldine Nave said, when he was first put on it, he thought it was going to be a dog's dish.
Yes.
And then he became more and more interested as time went on in all the complexities of it. For instance, of course, the local authorities were responsible for aftercare from mental hospitals, which they were exercising in very, very different ways. In fact, the two extremes that we found were in some areas where there were mental welfare officers and they had good relations with the local mental hospital, that the psychiatrists would let them come to the seminars for the psychiatric nurses. And so they really were learning a lot about mental illness, as well as working with the families. In other places, you might get absolutely no communication between the local authority and the hospital. And the hospital did all its own aftercare, which of course obviously meant that the local authority took no interest or responsibility for what was their responsibility.
Rabina Addis was telling me there was some kind of discussion in the working party about the nature of the CSW courses as they were to become.
Indeed, it was, because we who proposed them.
Yes, I mean, with the some employers not being able to understand why the whole thing couldn't be done by correspondence.
Yes, well, there were a whole variety of bright ideas, not helped, of course, by our terms of reference, which said, and to inquire whether there is a need for in-service training for the basic grade. Well, we pretty soon decided that in the complexity of these services, there certainly was no place for in-service training as a basic thing for the basic grade. There certainly was a case for in-service training for everybody.
Yes.
But not as all that you gave to a basic grade. We were faced, of course, well, I think I've said in that history the kind of dilemmas that that faced us. Whether to recommend something like a kind of a part-time course, which really would have been quite ineffective. Whether to recommend a one-year course, which really would have been too short. Or whether to go the whole hog, knowing the kind of, well, thinking of the kind of opposition we'd get, and recommend a two-year course. Because remember that this didn't rest on a social science base, as the applied social studies courses did. This rested on no base at all. This was to be something complete in itself. Now, the most dangerous recommendation we made was that there should be courses outside the university.
Yes.
Which would, well, I'm pausing there. I'll just backtrack and tell you why I paused there. I said outside the university. One of the secretaries to the working party woke up one night in a cold sweat from a dream in which somebody had pointed out to her that the working party had recommended non-U courses. Non-U. Non-university.
Yes.
So wherever we'd referred to non-university, we had to change it so that nobody could make terrible jokes about being non-U. But of course that again was something absolutely new. Or rather, it was coming back in a way to the old little specialized courses outside the universities, but trying to put them on a decent level in general educational institutions.
Yeah.
We had absolutely no idea what the response would be of the professional associations,
yeah.
what the response would be of colleges of further education,
mm.
whether they could do it. Mm. And also, of course, we didn't know what would be forthcoming in the way of students, because this was throwing the door wide open.
Mm.
It didn't seem very possible in those days to be absolutely rigid about educational standards. In fact, the only experience we had to go on was probation.
Mm.
The Rayner House students, the older students who didn't take a university qualification.
Yes.
Of course, they came in with any or no educational qualifications.
Yes.
Many very good people,
yes.
but with a very wide variety of backgrounds.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we were opening the door to this same group,
yes.
but saying, no, it can't be done in 1 year, which is what mm-hmm. Rayner House was doing,
mm-hmm.
saying it must take mm-hmm. 2 years,
mm-hmm.
and not specialised like Rayner House,
yes.
must be in an educational institution.
Yes.
So we were taking a very big risk
yes.
when we did this.
Yeah, and wasn't the other Rabindra Addis was remembering that you there was a sort of an impasse in the working party with well, she said she was not persuaded up to that time of the need for a general education, and she was holding out for specialist education, and there was a residential weekend in which you had to sort yourselves out.
That famous residential weekend,
she
yes.
was persuaded that weekend.
Yes, that's splendid.
Can you remember that?
I don't remember that anybody was holding out. No, this was Rabindra Addis remembered this, wasn't it?
Mm.
No, I don't remember.
Well, assuming I'm paraphrasing her correctly.
Mm. 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 Yes, that weekend made all the difference. It was after lunch at that weekend that the whole idea of what became the National Institute for Social Work was born.
Really? Yeah.
Just in a free-floating discussion.
Yes. Yeah. Sort of the need for a sort of staff college.
Yeah, right. Exactly. This is Tom Tinto and Geraldine Ayres, who were just sitting, having desultory conversation after lunch on the Sunday. Tom Tinto said to Geraldine Ayres, what we want is something like your civil defence staff college.
Mm.
And she said, yes, it is. Well, I saw that there were some germs of a mighty good idea in this.
Mm.
So I took it up and fanned it and carried it further. And then we discussed it in the working party itself
yes.
and decided to make this recommendation.
Yes.
And when our report came out, the Carnegie Trust and Nuffield seized on this at once.
Mm.
As something which they jointly might finance.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. Well, and the report was published in 1959, wasn't
That's
it?
That's right. Mm-hmm.
Which sort of brings to the end of the period. So I wonder whether I can backtrack a bit and ask you this: What would you say has been the most, or perhaps put it a different way, what has been amongst the most influential ideas during this period from 1929 to 1959? If you had to sort of pick out the ideas 1, 2, 3, 4, what would you say?
I think probably the idea that resulted in the Carnegie
mm-hmm.
course.
Yes. Yes.
And. Well, then, of course, there was the United Nations Third International Survey of Training for Social Work, which I was doing during 58
mm-hmm.
and was published in 59.
Yes.
That was an attempt to... Have you seen that? Is it available to you?
I haven't seen
No.
This. No.
Well, in... I think it was 58, might have been the end of 57. The UN from 1950 had every 3 years produced a worldwide report on training for social work. And they decided that the third one should be on the curriculum.
Uh-huh.
and they asked me to do it. And it was an attempt to analyse both what was happening in social work in the world as a whole, and what were the common elements in training, and also what was happening in training in different parts of the world. So that was used pretty widely internationally when after it was published. Now, I think probably the Carnegie course the most important thing, as far as I'm concerned. That working party and the two-year courses which resulted from it were all also extremely important, because it did produce the numbers. It did bring in a vast number of people who wouldn't have come into social work otherwise.
Yes.
And did make possible an expansion which wouldn't have happened otherwise. Frederick Seebohm said to me once, if it hadn't been for your report and the two-year courses, the Seebohm reorganisation would not have been possible.
That's right. What about I suppose the I was wondering about ideas about practice. I mean, with ideas about social work. Practice have changed greatly during that time, between 29 and 59.
Well, I was absolutely clear from the late 1940s onwards that practice did mean teaching students in the actual life situation. They're having responsibility. And being helped to apply theory to practice and practice to theory, rather than seeing the organizational structure of the agency that they could perform with a kind of skill which the untrained wouldn't have. And it seemed to me, and does still seem, that supervision is the best way that's been evolved. Field teaching is the best thing that's been evolved with doing this. And I think we're ahead of a lot of other professions.
Yes.
In this, certainly ahead of the teaching profession, and probably of medicine.
Yes. Well, can I ask you my Barbara Wooden questions about the critical things that have been said about social workers for this period? And I mean, I use Barbara Wooden and Audrey Harvey as a reference point because they seem to bring it all together.
Well, yes, since I've read social science and social pathology, but I think she was right in some things. I think we reacted in too blanket away. I was reading the other day, I came across the reviews of her book, which I'd cut out, several of which were extremely good. There was an excellent one by Roger Wilson, and a very good one by Jack Wolfenden, for example. I think she was right when she said, but it was the way she said it, that that the poor need the kind of skillful, confidential secretary available to the rich. Now, I think if you analyse some of the things that a good secretary does of mobilising resources and all the rest of it, that we are beginning to see that this is an important element. Well, not beginning to see, have seen that this is a very important element in social work. So I think she was right about that. I think she was simply blind to the complexities of being able to help some people in considerable difficulty. Blind to the fact that it could be done, but wasn't done by chance or or by being good-hearted, or being a close friend or a relation. I've quite forgotten what Audrey Harvey did say.
Well, I mean, Audrey Harvey worked in the CAB in the East End, didn't she, and was very much in touch with housing problems, and said that in her negotiations with social workers, notably PSWs, she found them unaware of the influence social conditions had on people's behaviour, and that they were constantly attributing people's behaviour people's predicament to their own qualities, their attributes.
I think PSWs.
There was a very noisy meeting at the London Fabian Society.
Was there?
She presented her paper, and Reg Wright and Kay McDougal were wheeled on as PSWs. The London Fabians hadn't caught on that Reg Wright and Kay McDougal were both themselves Fabians and didn't say the sort of things they were supposed to say to make the thing go.
I don't think they would. It was. I do know what she meant, though. I remember a meeting of the then Family Discussion Bureau when they were discussing individual cases of marital conflict, and I remember saying, well, what about suggesting to X that they should join local adult education classes? And I was looked at in absolute horror.
Yes.
You know, this could have anything to do with the internal dynamics of marital interaction. I mean, the whole concept of lessening tensions in this kind of way just wasn't on then.
Yeah.
I think what so often gets ignored is that these are not either-or choices.
Yes.
I mean, Audrey Harvey and housing. Goodness knows it was the Barnetts and Octavia Hill in the East End of London who first began to shout aloud about the connection between bad housing and distorted behaviour, wasn't it?
Yes. I remember this right, but the Barnetts fell out with the COS, didn't they?
Yeah, the COS did very much less than the Barnetts or Octavia Hill.
Because the Barnetts were getting tied in, weren't they going to get tied up with statism?
They got tied up with statism, yes, increasingly.
Can we come back to Lola Wotton and, you know, I mean, besides writing social science and social pathology, she wrote that article, or review article in 20th Century, didn't she?
Oh, yes, so she did.
When your report came out.
Yes, so she did.
And a lot of that, I mean, was sort of personally directed at you.
Yes, so it was. I'd quite forgotten that. Yes, so she...
what's in the article?
No, I've forgotten.
Well, I mean, she first of all comments that it's a very dry report and said that it's very says you couldn't understand it because you were renowned for your wit on the bench and so on and then goes on to say the report seems to be as obsessed with the BBC with dividing the nation into seeing the nation as having a BBC sees the nation as having a tripartite division of intelligence. Because it was the first, second.
Oh, this was our three.
There were three.
I'd forgotten about the three tiers. Yeah. Yes, of course, the three tiers.
Three tiers of workers.
Yes, of course, very many.
And then she sort of said, and your case illustration of the unmarried mother who comes to ask for a layette and goes into a whole ditty about this, that and the other about this girl, but you never find out whether she got the layette or not.
Yes, so she...
And it, they're all criticisms of that sort.
Yeah, yes, it was. Well, it is a technique which she's used over the years, because there was no evidence that she didn't get the layette. The three tiers, yes, this caused an awful lot of controversy, and the three tiers of training which we put with it, of course we were wrong, but we were frightened of the professional associations. We were wrong in making this distinction between the university trained and the non-use. But it's interesting how much subsequently has been those at any rate two tiers. Take three tiers. I mean, take the present day CQSW,
yes.
Post qualifying courses, CSS.
Yes.
That's the three, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Yes.
It always seems to come back or go called by different names.
Yes, yes. Yeah. I suppose one of the things I will always, when I sort of lived, I was into social work then, I couldn't understand why the social workers at the time didn't sort of fight back harder at some of those arguments that Barbara Wootton was putting forward. Because, as you just said, it isn't as straightforward as she tries to.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, and I can't understand why didn't social workers shout back? I mean, my feeling at the time, my impression at the time was that you didn't.
No, I suppose we didn't. You mean that 20th century?
Yes, I was going to say, why didn't you sort of come back on that 20th century?
I don't think it would have been much point. I mean, this is her line. Nothing's going to convince her or change the line. And she's developed some very witty ways of putting it.
Yes.
For instance, when the Carnegie Report came out, and I said that you must look much more comprehensively at the individual. I said, insofar as it's relevant to helping, and I instanced the surroundings, the person, relationships, and so on. And so her comeback was, the social worker does this, and then the only thing to do is to marry him. Well, what she just ignored was my saying, insofar as it's relevant.
Yes.
And the other day, the Community Care in London Weekend Television had a conference on Which Way for Welfare, which Barbara Wootton was speaking. And she had a fine old crack at CQSW courses because she said that the syllabuses included psychology, sociology, anthropology, I've forgotten there was a fourth, social administration, I suppose. Well, then she went on with a quite unwarrantable thing. The whole of psychology, the whole of sociology, the whole of anthropology and so on, which of course everyone in the audience must have known that it's not.
Yes.
But you see, that makes a scoring point.
Yes. Margaret Simon was talking about that.
Oh, about that conference, was she?
As you say, she really is a sort of a real battler.
Oh yes, she is.
And what startled me was that she sort of grouped Baroness Faithfull, Barbara Wootton, and herself together as a quartet.
Well, we were because we were the four old
influence you'd all had on, and the way you'd she said we've overshadowed a whole generation. She said, our generation has overshadowed a whole generation.
Yeah, well,
she said that there.
No, she did. Well, we had jokes about the four old ladies. I thought it was a great mistake that they did have four people of so far generations back. Of course, Lucy Faithfull was in a very difficult position because she had to speak for the government.
What would be the interesting point she was making, and it links up with the point Jean Snelling was making this morning too, was she said, the reason why she linked to very different people with very different views, she said that you all represent the generation of women who suddenly discovered that here you could, it was like female emancipation, getting into a profession, having a role, an occupational role in your own right.
Mm-hmm. Different professions.
Space to sort of exercise your own potential, your own abilities and so on.
Yeah, that's an interesting point.
Not shackled to men.
And of course the women who came into social work were on the whole, in the earlier period, more able than the men.
Yes. And more forceful. I hadn't thought of in that way before.
No, I hadn't thought of that either.
Can I ask you a last question?
Yep.
It's the question about what's the best thing.
I think the Carnegie course, because it embodied all the ideas about the common base of social work, and also good educational method.
Yes.
Now people get so confused between social work, educational method and educational content.
Yes.
Of course, the content has changed tremendously, but I think the method was, which was very different from the preceding method, excepting in the mental health course. I think the method was absolutely right, but I think for its time the content was.
Yes.
It was too narrow, granted, but it was what was available at the time.
Well, thank you very much.
So, now how do I unclip?